Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome our mental guru, the renowned confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. So stay tuned for an interesting hour and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to get our confidence up. We wanted to visit with our mental guru. We try to make a regular appointment with Dr. Bob Winters, and usually we can lock him in. He's a busy guy. He's helping all kinds of professional golfers, collegiate golfers, amateur golfers, recreational golfers. He's got the gamut. He's got the gamut going, but he is our go-to guy, and we welcome Doc back to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
Well, Keith, it's great to be back on the show. It's been a little while. And so how you been?
Not too bad. I am so hankering to get out on the golf course on a regular basis and see what I can do this season. You know, it's year by year and year to year when it comes to the game of golf.
Well, here it is. You know, it's just a few weeks, you know, before Augusta and everything. Now the drums are beating, you know, towards, you know, the Masters, you know, tournament. We've just had the Players Championship. You know, we're, you know, kind of finishing up the Florida swing, you know, this week over in Tampa at Valspar. And, you know, it's just been, you know, a great, great run. We've had some great champions here. And the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, you know, has been, you know, over in Asia. And now they're kind of traveling back a little bit. So we've got a lot of college, you know, teams. You've had, you know, some nice players winning college tournaments. And it's been really, you know, a lot of fun. Juniors. You know, it's just spring break right here in Florida right now. And don't let me talk to you about, you know, Daytona Beach or any other beach here in Florida, because it's just a mass of, you know, human protoplasm. I mean, it's just every place, you know, but it's a lot of fun. People are having fun enjoying the sunshine. And I'll tell you what, they needed to get out, because I know that a lot of my friends up north of the Mason-Dixon line have had, you know, really tough, tough winter. So I don't know, you know, what it's been like there in the Washington, D.C. area, but I know I have friends there as well, and they tell me they had a lot of really, really bad weather, you know, this winter.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you can wake up in the morning and it might be 40, 45, or maybe even 50, but it feels like 45, one of those deals. And then by afternoon, it could be really, really nice, and then it's just back and forth, and it's been crazy, and the weather across the nation has been unbelievable. This winter and into the spring are waiting. The bulbs are not sure if they should come out or they shouldn't come out. There's buds on the trees. There's some flowers that are blooming both on the trees and on the ground. So spring is upon us. And, you know, we always look forward to Augusta, and we will be there for Masters Week, and happy to say that. But it's really unofficially the start of the golf season. Everybody says, oh, no matter where you are, In the country, sometimes in the world, once Masters Week is upon us, then it's the real deal. But a couple of guys one guy won't be playing, and that's Tiger Woods. We want to talk a little bit about him this hour. And the other guy, it took a Monday finish this past Monday for Rory McIlroy to win the Players. And, of course, all the bettors and the odds makers and all that kind of stuff are picking Rory as one of the front runners to win the green jacket this year. He's missing that in his portfolio, and that would be interesting if he were able to pull that off. But it's the mental thing going on. So you have an extra day of golf that you have to play. It's just you and another guy for the championship, and he was able to be mentally stable and effective and win the Players' Championship trophy, which is a beautiful trophy, by the way, in Florida. But, you know, then it's on to figuring out, am I ready for Augusta National?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just take a look at this Players' Championship. And kudos, you know, to Rory McIlroy. I mean, he won his second Players' Championship. I think his last one was, what, 2019? Right before COVID. He won it then. And going into a playoff against J.J. Spahn, let's kind of talk about that, because I had a lot of people ask me on different social media and different podcasts or whatever, what I thought of J.J. Spahn, what did I think of his remarks after it was all made. Well, the one thing I did see Rory and even J.J. do a little bit, because J.J. Spahn, I mean, he's been a PGA Tour winner before. But, it's the Players' Championship, and I always like to say this is, one hell of a field. It's on a great golf course. The golf course, really was playing very windy on Sunday, and even on Monday, it was blowing quite breezily. And I think for me, wind is one of the toughest variables in golf, because it fluctuates, from microsecond to microsecond, and you're trying to make a real clear decision about what you're going to do. So Rory in the playoff, when he goes out, he birdies number 16, and JJ, misses one. He, now makes par. So, Rory even talked about having the edge going into the 17th tee. He got his ball onto the green. Now, for the listenership and the listening audience, if you've never been there to TPC Sawgrass, obviously one of the most photographed holes in the world, and a couple of Hoosiers, since, my native, state, Indiana, Pete Dye and Alice Dye, they were designing, this golf course. And, way back in the early 70s, before it opened, I remember Pete Dye was going to lead, just sort of this island. And there was going to be just an immense amount of sand and open space around it. And it was Pete's wife, Alice, said, why don't you just flood it? Just making an island green out there. So it was really, the genius of Alice Dye that came through and gave Pete, the gumption to go ahead and flood it. But if you've ever been there, have you been there, Keith? Have you played it?
I have not played it. I have been there. I've not played TBC. Both Pete and Alice were guests on this show years ago. And
just two of the greatest people.
She was interesting. I'll talk about her in a minute, but you go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, yeah, she was a fantastic amateur player, and she was wonderful. And Pete, designed so many golf courses, around my stomping grounds, around the Indianapolis, Indiana area, all around Carmel and Crooked Stick, and the list goes on and on. Harbor Trees is another golf course there in Noblesville, Indiana. And he used all the railroad ties and the railroad cars and things like that. But the thing about the 17th at TPC, the stadium course, is that when you're standing there on the tee, and I've been on that tee, gosh, I can't even tell you how many different players over the years. I mean, going way back even into, 1983, 84, 85, when they moved it from the Sawgrass Country Club, and they thought that was just too tough. When Mark Hayes won it one year, I think he was about, two or three over, and he won it. And they moved it, to the Players Stadium course. But when you step up in that tee, that green looks very, very small. And it's sort of a depth perception dilemma, because there's really nothing around it that you can actually have a reference to. We talk about, silo, small in, large out, something, that you can actually have a figure ground relationship to. So when you look at it, it's really hard to create some type of distance judgment. Also, because you've got, sort of that opening from the 18th fairway, that kind of goes that walkway. You've got kind of like a little funnel, an air funnel that comes through, and it shoots a lot of wind through there, and you're not really feeling that on that tee. So you're on that tee, and I think, we play that hole anywhere from 140 to anywhere to maybe 165 yards. But they were just really using hitting a wedge or a 9-iron there. And so that morning before Rory and JJ go out, they're both hitting different shots, what they're going to hit on 16, 17, the tee shot in 18. So they are really specifically training themselves to hit certain types of shots. And what I'm trying to actually, transfer to help everyone understand, one of the very best ways you can warm up before you go play, it's a great bridge between the warm-up area, we call the driving range or the prep area, to the first tee box. And a lot of people talk about that dreaded 6-foot asphalt bridge, you know, that you have to walk across in order to get to the first tee, you know, from the driving range or wherever you're going from. And I've always said, you know, that if you can actually warm up and on the range and do the first 2 or 3 holes and sort of create your target lines, create, you know, the environment for yourself, step in, do your full pre-shot routine, make it as game-like as you can, that will really help you feel a little bit more at ease when you step up on that first tee. But that's really what JJ and Rory were doing. So Rory hits his ball onto that 17th green. Now, if we take a look at the square footage of that green, you could take 2 semi-trailer trucks and put them, you know, side to side, you know, end to end, from the left side to the right side. That's how wide it is. And it's about maybe a semi-truck, 1.5 from front to the back. So there is quite a bit of room there. But I got to tell you, even with the wedge, 9-iron, 8-iron sometimes, is that with that wind, you know, you can't really overplay it. You can't underplay it. And when they have that pin in that Sunday position or a playoff position back there to the right edge, well, how many times have we seen players go right at it and they just actually let it leak out to the right for so many years? And I can't even tell you what tournaments they were, but one of the things, the first, I think, U.S. amateur that Tiger Woods won, he was in a match against Tripp Keeney, and he actually hit, he said he was trying to attack the flag. I happen to think he was actually going for the middle of the green. But the wind blew it, and it came right to the edge of sort of that rail, of that, you know, railroad tie rail. And Tiger actually putted one and made one to close Tripp Keeney out right there in that hole. And I've seen so many players over there in that right side, whether it be Fred Couples or Tiger Woods or whoever it has been over there. I mean, even Ricky Fowler that one year hit a great shot when he won the Players' Championship, and he actually said he hit for the middle of the green, but the ball just sort of drifted over there to the right, and he had like a 5-footer. I think he was playing in a playoff with Sergio. Do you remember that, Keith?
Vaguely, but yeah, it's, you know, that was, yeah, that was, you know, two name guys of that level playing against each other. So it's, you know, you
yeah,
definitely
it,
knew
it
about
it. It was unbelievable. You know, the Players' Championship has been an unbelievable tournament, you know, a big tournament for me, because when I really first started really being out there on tour, working with players and really helping them, you know, get their minds right and do a lot of sports vision, a lot of sports psychology work. But what I really like, and I hope everybody, I apologize for my little hoarseness here. I got something going on. I guess, you know, it's this, you know, the spring cold.
Yeah, he was probably yelling at somebody earlier. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, it was probably. And, yeah, I just tried to get this in your head. It's what we call shout therapy. And he's just not getting it. So, yeah, we're just shouting at these people now, just trying to get their attention. That's the first thing you got to do. You got to get this player's attention. But J.J. Spahn, as he hit an iron, and he hit it so well in follow-up, you know, to Rory's shot, the ball pierced right through the wind, and he went over the green. Well, obviously, he ends up, you know, making double bogey. But Rory ends up 3-putting that hole, so there's only a shot drop. But, I mean, it was just sort of the air, you know, was all let out of the tire at that time. And they asked him in the follow-up interview, and I thought he did a wonderfully handsome job of staying, you know, very composed. And he said, listen, you know, my caddy and I were talking about between a 9-iron, and I said, I'm going to hit an 8-iron. I'm going to flight it down. It's going to pierce through, and it's going to be just, you know, the absolute great shot. Because I hit it well. I fully committed to the shot. Full intention, purposeful commitment. And I stepped up, and I hit it.
With Dr. Bob Winters, heading to a break. We'll be back. And And we are back with our mental guru, the Confidence Doctor. Change your mind, change your game. He's got so many. He's got all these. He's got books. He's got a lot of stuff. He's got a lot of hours and a lot of years on coming on this show and building his resume and all that kind of stuff. And now he's into the shout therapy. This is breaking news right here on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Dr. Bob Winters, the mild manner. Dr. Bob Winters using shout therapy to get through to his clients. But
well, it's not so much, you know, to my clients. I think, you know, a lot of people, in fact, you know, I think millions of golfers have been doing shout therapy for years. And I think, you know, that Titleist and Callaway and Bridgestone, I think they're really missing the boat. I think instead of actually putting numbers, let's start putting eyes on the golf ball. Let's start putting ears on the golf ball. If we're going to actually start talking to the golf ball like it's a human being, let's humanize the golf balls up a little bit, because I got to tell you, I listen to golfers all the time. You know, they're saying, sit, get up, go, come on. Oh, you know, I remember a guy I was playing with years ago, Keith. It's kind of a funny story. And he's up there and he's on a water hole, pretty much like the 17th at TPC. And he's up there and he goes and he hit the shot and it looks like it's going to not get to the green. Well, the ball goes up and he's going, all right, get up there, get it, Linda. And he starts shouting at the ball. He goes, go, Linda, go. And then the ball just goes in the water. He goes, drowned, drowned, Linda. And I go, and I looked at his partner, and, you know, we were just playing. I think it was at Stone Mountain, Georgia. I was playing with my brother, Bill, and we're playing. They put two other people with us, and they really didn't know who I was, but they were just really wonderful people. And I asked, you know, the other guy, I said, he's talking to his ball. He's talking about, you know, his Linda, and he's telling it to drown. He goes, just drown. Why don't you just drown, Linda? And the guy looked at me. He said, I hate to tell you, Bob, but he's going through a real nasty divorce right now. So I mean, it was kind of a funny story. So you hear a lot of players tell these sort of inside stories. When I say shout therapy, I think people have been doing a lot of shout therapy, having that emotional catharsis for years. Now, it's not, you know, that I, you know, suggest that at all, but it's amazing. It's amazing how, you know, one of the, we're supposed to go out and play this wonderful game, you know, for peace, harmony, composure. But so many people, you know, have, you know, almost a form of road rage, golf rage, when their results don't match their expectations. And I don't know really what they expect. I mean, they don't play any golf during the week. They don't hit any golf balls. They race, you know, like hell to get to the first tee. They haven't had any warm-up shots. And they expect to go out there and play like a Rory McIlroy or an Adam Scott, you know, or a Nelly Korda. So, I mean, we've got some real misplaced expectations out there. So I guess, bless their hearts, because these people have helped me make it, you know, a very nice living, trying to get them, you know, to be cool, calm, and composed, and not have shout therapy at themselves. But I will tell you this, Keith, and this is something, you know, comes from the scientific literature. You and I have talked about this now for several years. I've had people always come up to me and say, wow, you are the most positive person I've ever met. And it's funny because I never told anybody really to go out and think positive or be positive, even though that's a pretty good strategy. Even if you did just that, you would be, you know, making, you know, headway. But the real trick, you know, in this game is to stop or suspend all the negative thoughts, all the negative self-talk, all the disparaging remarks that you say to yourself, and quit holding yourself emotionally hostage. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, be your own best friend, I mean, we've heard that, you know, for many, many years, be kinder to yourself. But you don't even have to do that. If you would just stop and limit the negative thoughts and just allow maybe your talent to come through a little bit more. And you don't have to give yourself a Nick Saban, you know, motivational speech. You don't have to do, you know, any of that. But you do have to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to give myself permission to be human, to make mistakes. And if I actually do that and limit, you know, the amount of self-talk that's negative, what we call negaholics, people who use negative, you know, self-talk, they become negaholics, like an alcoholic, but they're, you know, their liquor is negativity. It's, you know, insane remarks they make about their game. And they get caught up in this vicious cycle, and it's a dance of anger. And, you know, it really never gets them anywhere. So if you just suspend the negative thoughts, the negative talk, and just allow some of that talent to come out that you know you have, I think you would enjoy the game a little bit more.
Absolutely. So we're Dr. Bob Winters heading to the bottom of the hour. We'll be back.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga la Gunga.
And we are back with the second half hour of the show, spending it with our mental guru, Dr. Bob Winters. And a couple interesting things in the first half of the show. One was the negativity, trying to get rid of those thoughts. The other thing that you touched on quite vividly was people, and professional golfers do this all the time. They talk to an inanimate object. And I love Ben Wright when he was on the show, because he did a line where it's like, well, if I said this is, that would make me an inanimate object. But anyway, you're talking to the ball. No ears, no eyes, although if Mr. Callaway was still with us, I think he would probably take that idea and run with it. But what is it that people or golfers are trying to – I know what they're trying to accomplish by talking to the ball, but the ball's not listening. So what are they doing in their mind that gets them to think that if they talk to the ball can somehow hear them?
Well, I think, you know, it serves a purpose. I mean, a multi-fold purpose. And first of all, I think it helps, you know, release some of the pent-up anxiety, performance anxiety that one has. One of the very best at, you know, really sort of using his self-talk to help him and help his game was one Lee Buck Trevino. Lee Buck Trevino, along with his, you know, caddy and Lee Trevino and his caddy, you know, big Herman Mitchell, wonderful caddy on, you know, the PGA Tour. I mean, I don't know how big Herman was. Herman had to be 370 pounds, you know, if he was an ounce. I mean, he was big. But Lee would go up to his ball, and he would see his ball, like, in the rough. And he would talk to Herman about that ball. He would talk about the lie. And we would talk about ego-enhancing behavior and ego-protecting behavior. But Lee Buck Trevino would sit there, and he would tell, you know, Herman, he'd go, look at that, Herman. Look at that lie right there. There's nobody in the world can hit that shot. No one in the world but Lee Buck Trevino. And Herman Mitchell would be just really right there, his yes man, giving him confidence, giving him support, going, that's right, boss. That's right. You know, only Buck Trevino could hit that shot. He said, you know, give me that big four wood. And so Herman would give him that big four wood, and he'd step up there, and Lee would actually talk himself into hitting this shot out of a bad lie. And he'd hit the shot. Now, if he hit the shot really well, he said, look at that, Herman. You know, look at that Lee Trevino. You know, Lee Trevino is the only guy in the world. I'm telling you, only guy in the world that can hit that type of shot right there. Woo-wee. And Herman would go, that's right, boss. That's right. You know, you can hit that shot. And he would tell everybody, you know, that shot was well-conceived and well-executed, you know, just the way that Lee Buck Trevino saw it, right? Now, that's when he hit it well. So that's sort of ego-enhancing self-talk. Now, if he had that same shot, and he was talking about that lie, and he actually mishit that shot, he would go into ego-protecting behavior. He would sit there and go, well, you know, we know that, Herman. Hey, nobody could hit that shot. I mean, I hit that shot pretty well, but there's nobody in the world. I don't think even God could actually hit that shot right there. No way, boss. No way. Nobody could hit that shot. You know, not even God. And so they would actually have this banter back and forth. But make no mistake, of all the competitors in the world, Lee Trevino was absolutely one of the toughest, grittiest, most persistent competitors to ever play the game. Think about all the people he went head-to-head with and actually defeated. I mean, the Tony Jacklins, the Jack Nicklauses, the Tom Watsons. I mean, he went against head-to-head against all of these guys. And one thing that gave him his edge was the ability for him to talk to himself in a way that allowed him to elevate his level of focus and performance to hit the shot in that moment. And that is really one of the attributes that really makes Lee Trevino great. But at the same time, let's not kid ourselves. Lee Trevino was really sort of releasing a lot of that pent-up anxiety with his mouth. I mean, he would talk. Then he'd get to like a little moratorium, you know, suspend, you know, the self-talk, step up, hit the shot, and then talk about the result. But it's almost to me like an overinflated tire, all right? When your tires are overinflated, you don't want to inflate them too much because they're likely to pop. So by using your self-talk and sort of talking yourself down, is like you have the pressure relief valve. It just sort of goes, you know, and the more that you talk, the more you sort of relax, you know, yourself. I knew this happened when I was coaching as assistant coach at the University of Virginia many, many years ago. And I was the assistant, you know, there with head coach Mike Morrigan, who was a fabulous player and a fabulous coach. And he coached there for many years. And we were together for many years. And we had a wonderful player from Zimbabwe who won the South African amateur. He was one of the only black men to have ever won the South African amateur. And he came from Zimbabwe, and Lewis played for us. But Lewis had a player that really, from another school, played for Wake Forest, that was talking to him. And Lewis came up to me and he said, "Coach," he goes, "this player just talks and talks and talks to me. It's so annoying. How do I actually handle it?" And I looked at Lewis and I said, "Lewis, why do you think he's talking so much?" I said, "One of the things is, I think he sort of reveres you. He sort of idolizes you. He recognizes you're a good player, and he's using his talk to befriend you and sort of make himself feel at ease. So when you do that, just acknowledge him. Get into your own little bubble and just realize that it's almost a sign of admiration and respect." And I think, you know, that really changed, you know, Lewis's perspective of people. And those two people became very good friends as the next couple of years because they saw each other many, many times. I won't give the name of the other player, but Lewis, you know, Chitangwa passed away. He was really one of the head of PGA Tour stardom. But he passed away from a very different strain of spinal meningitis playing the PGA Canadian Tour one summer, many summers ago. So golf lost a great, you know, athlete, a great golfer, because Louis Chitangwa was probably going to be a rival of one Tiger Woods. They had seen each other, you know, several times. So the golf world lost a great win right there.
Well, you were talking about a great Lee Trevino earlier, and he's the only person I've ever seen in person hit a hole in one, and it was up at the treetops in Michigan a number of years ago, and it was an exhibition, but it's got these steep inclines. I mean, you're hitting from the top of a hill down to a green and stuff. So he comes to this one tee box, and I'm in my golf cart, and he's getting ready. He's going to prepare off. I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to go down to the green to watch the incoming shot." So I get down there in time, and the shot comes in. It hits an embankment. It hits the side of the wall of grass along the green. And I go, "Okay, it's going to stick there." And it bounces. It bounces onto the green, and it rolls, and then it goes in the hole. And it was just this amazing thing. But he had talked about the kind of shot he was going to hit while he was at the tee box before I left to come down to the green to watch the incoming shot. And it was fascinating to listen to him, and then to see the results. Because I'm sure he mishit the shot. You know, people usually don't hit into an embankment on purpose. However, because of who he is and who he was, and the golf gods are involved too, he made a hole in one right before ours. It was just phenomenally astounding. But you know, it gave him something else to talk about. Guess what? He talked even more after that.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Well, if you know, this sort of dates me a little bit, and some of our listeners. We used to have, you know, on NBC Sports, you know, it was called the NBC Skins, the Skins game, where you had people like Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, you know, people playing like that, you know, for money. And back then it was hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of millions of dollars. And I remember Lee Trevino had about a 110-yard shot, hit a wedge shot, and knocked it into the hole. And I think he won like $125,000. Peter Jacobson was the on-course commentator. He goes, "Wow, Lee." He goes, "Did you believe that?" He said, "Hey, folks." He goes, "Believe it or not, I've been practicing all my life for that shot right there." He goes, and he goes, and hey, he goes, don't be surprised. He goes, "Hey, that's really what I'm aiming at that thing." But he said that one day, and it just made so much perfect sense to me. Because when I talk to people, golfers, who have a lot, I mean a lot, multiple holes in one on par threes, I always ask them, and here's the answer I get, and it's a very simple answer. I go, "What were you thinking when you stepped up there, you know, make that?" And you'll hear them say every time, "Well, every time I step on a par three that's a reasonable distance, and even on a longer one, I'm thinking about making an ace. I'm thinking about this ball going into the hole." And so when we think about that, I mean, that's really what my whole thing is, change your mind, change your game. You know, the moment you change your mind about the things you're thinking about, the things you think about, you know, start to change as well. And I started to think about, hey, if we actually can narrow our focus and say, "I want to hit this thing right in the hole," it's amazing how the brain, you know, tells the body, "This is what we want it to do," and then boom. But that's the whole point. Most people don't say, "I want to do this." Most people say, "Boy, I don't want to go right. I don't want to miss it left." They're giving themselves negative programming or negative self-instruction versus proactive, purposeful direction. And that's the big thing between really great players and players who want to be great players. Great players have a directed focus. Average players, poor players, have a misdirected focus. They focus more on what they don't, you know, want to have happen versus what they do want to have happen.
It's like taking the lateral hazards out of play, right? They're there, you know they're there, but you kind of lock them out. You put your blinders on if you can and go nowhere near them. Because once those thoughts creep in or leak into your mind, you're likely going to be in that hazard.
Well, for me, I always like to think about bowling. When you take people bowling, most people go, "Boy, I hope I don't roll it into gutter." And next thing you know, they roll gutter balls. Then they sort of put up these rails, okay? And it's funny, even though they put up the rails, a lot of times because they have the rails, it's sort of like a safety margin. And I think that's really what, you know, great players have in their mind. They have visualization. They have safety rails. They say, "Okay, I don't want to go here. I don't want to go there." They've created their boundaries. Now they say, "Okay, now where do I want to go?" And they actually focus in, you know, more precise focusing on what they want to do rather than any possibility of the ball could go anywhere else.
Yeah, I remember playing in Florida a number of months ago at the Astor Creek Golf Club in Port St. Lucie. Chris Wilczynski did a nice, really nice job doing that. It was a very windy day, bringing it full circle, since you talked about all the wind from the players and championship and such. And Florida is hillier than you think it is, and it's also windier than you – I mean, crosswinds and everything else. It's probably the windiest day I've ever played golf. So you hit your shot, and you hope for the best. You try to keep it as low as possible and get the best results if you can. But you can't help but have this thing bother you the whole time. You're on the tee box and it's trying to blow you over, and you're trying to swing and it's trying to blow you over, and you're out on the fairway and it's whipping through and it changes direction and it's doing all, it has, the wind has a mind of its own, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was just up a couple of days ago up into Ocala, Florida, home of the World Equestrian Center. It's wonderful thoroughbred country. I think that's really where Secretariat and all these other horses, you know, have actually been, you know, spawned and raised from. And I was up at the Golden Ocala Golf and Equestrian Club with some of my students, getting them ready for the Ocala City Open, which is this beautiful major, you know, tournament for, you know, traveling journeyman professionals. And it's going on right now, but the wind, you know, weather was beautiful, blue skies, but the weather has turned extremely windy. I mean, 30, 40 mile per hour gusts. And that's why I say the wind is so variable. It changes things in a microsecond. And you've got to have clear, decisive, purposeful thoughts so you can have directed, purposeful behavior. And so when you step in, you've got to be like J.J. Spahn. You got to say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And then you hit it. You have to be able to live with it and accept it. But the reason you accept it is because you thought it through first, and you were very clear and very sure of what you wanted to do. And after you hit it, hey, you don't have any control of it. The only control you have is how you want to accept it, release it, and move on.
Yeah, so says the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. More than 35 years of research, and he's just still researching to this day. He's been contributing to this show for well more than a decade, maybe decade and a half. We lose track because we've been on so long, and we're so pleased in the next couple of weeks that Nicholas Calloway, who is the youngest son of the late, great Ely Calloway, will be coming on to talk about the new Ely Calloway book. And we got some great guests around the corner. John Steinbrenner is going to join us as we roll up towards Masters Week and talk about Augusta at length and stuff. And, of course, the Doc will be back on. And the regular contributor, Bob Toski. We always make time for Toski. So, we're so pleased and proud to be able to do this show week after week and to have built and developed the relationships we have with guests like you, Doc.
Well, I mean, weren't we together at the PGA show when they were talking, you know, Nicholas Calloway was talking about the book and his father, and it's up, you know, Annika and David Ledbetter, and everybody was on stage, and you and I were right in the back, you know, and we were kind of watching that. Do you remember that?
Of course. I mean, how would I be? Come on, Dr. Hare. How would I not know that I was saying that we were hanging out together separately?
No, I just want to make sure, you know, that you're that your memory cells are still, you know, firing on.
I suffer from CRS, and you know, it seems to get worse every day. And people say, "What did you do last month?" I hope I can remember what I did last week. But what I am remembering is Dr. Bob Winters is a fantastic guest, and we've got another segment ahead after this upcoming break. But lots to talk about. Remember, the negaholics out there, limit the negative thoughts and enhance your ego when you get out on the course. So Doc's got so many things and such good advice to share the wealth, and we're pleased he's doing it on Teed Up Keith Jones. We'll be back. Flies by. We're back for our final segment of the show. It's been a pleasure to spend time with our mental guru, the illustrious Dr. Bob Winters, the confidence doctor, trademark, and a guy who continues to research. And that's one thing about you, whether it's your game, and I know we didn't talk about it this hour yet. I'm just going to slide it in real quick about that. You know, you are back competing, and you are serious about your game. This is the thing about you. Is you were very competitive, very successful collegiate golfer, well, junior golfer too, but collegiate golfer, and then into the pro ranks, and then becoming what you are now with the sports psychologist, not just golf, but really focusing on that, because that is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've always been like this. I mean, and I think this is why people have come to see me. And it's, you know, that's 35 years plus, that's dated. I mean, it looks now like we're about 50 years of research. You know, I mean, if I really think about it, you know, we started, you know, when we were, looking at this stuff about when I was 19, 20 years old. And now you look at me now and it's like, whoo, those years, those decades flew by really fast. So I look at all the different things that, you know, people are doing now. But I will tell you one thing, Keith, is that the mental game, everybody keeps talking about the mental game. And I remember, you know, talking with both Nancy Lopez and Laura Ball about, you know, mental game. And I had a chance, you know, to spend a little bit of time with Laura. And Laura's got a wonderful son, Eric Cole. She and Bobby Cole's son, Eric Cole, who's doing great on the PGA Tour now, who was a legendary journeyman mini tour player who's now just has really, you know, gotten some great, you know, PGA Tour status. But Nancy and Laura and so many of the old tour veterans that used to play in the old days, the 60s and 70s, said they always knew about the mental game. They always knew about, you know, persistence, patience, tolerance. But see, that's the whole point. They didn't really talk about sports psychology so much. They just knew that they had some secrets that they didn't really want to share. And they didn't want to share it with anybody. They weren't open about it. They didn't have YouTube forums. They didn't have, you know, Tee It Up, you know, with Keith Jones shows, you know, helping, you know, spread the information. And I think, you know, that's what made them such great competitors. They figured out some things for themselves that says, this is what I do. This is what helps me. And if I just go out and just do this, I can control me. So when we start talking about controlling the controllables and letting go of all those other things you can't control, that to me is really one of the biggest things, you know, about the mental game. And I've been doing this mental game for a long time, but the things that we talk about now, the things we talked about when we first started, you and I, many, many years ago, those golden nuggets are evergreen, meaning they never go out of style. They're always vogue. They are always in fashion. They are always applicable, and they always work. So when you hear people talk about the cliches of golf, the golden cliches are, you hear people like, be the ball, be the target. Well, you know, the other cliches are, you know, play your own game, meaning you own your own game, play your game. Two, you know, be in the moment. I mean, we're talking about flow. We're talking about focus. You know, play one shot at a time. These cliches, once you understand what they mean to you as a player and how you can apply them, now you've got some real mental mind power. And that's really, you know, what I created years ago. I created Mind Power Sports. That was really the name, you know, of my first company, Mind Power Sports, Dr. Bob Winters. And the reason why it was mind power, because that's exactly what the brain does. The brain gives, you know, the mind the power to think and make choices. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What's your purpose? What's your intention here? So, you know, it's really nothing new. You know, I've always tried to repackage it and use a lot of different stories. But every player, when they actually talk about their winning, like with Rory McIlroy, you get them in the interview room, what do they say? They say the same stuff, the golden, you know, keys. I played my game. You know, I didn't look at the leaderboard. I beat the course. I played one shot at a time. And if we could just get the listeners to understand that, now you're not playing the game of what's my score? What's my handicap? What do I need to do? You're playing one after one after one until Keith Jones is done.
Well, I'll tell you, Doc, we have to be done because we are out of time. So great to have you on. Dr. Bob Winters, my guest on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Get out there and practice your game. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.